Hello, this is Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are about to have a conversation with Dr. Arnold S. Relman. Dr. Relman and his wife, Dr. Marcia Angell, have been leaders of the New England Journal of Medicine for many years, both retired from that now, who made this organization from 1977 to 2000. One of either of them filled this top editorial post there and created a organization that tried to keep itself clear and free of infringement from money from pharmaceuticals and the rest, which underpins a great deal of their work. And Dr. Relman, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Mark. I'm delighted to be here.
So this is really a wonderful time to have this conversation with you, given what's going on in front of the Supreme Court, the battle over the health care package passed by Congress under President Barack Obama.
Yes, I've been following it very closely. I have most of the rest of the country.
Yes, I'm sure you have, and I'm curious as to your analysis of what's going on, because it's being attacked right and left, both from the conservatives, libertarian side, but also from and business side, also from people who believe in a single payer system.
Right.
Give me your read on what you think is going on at the moment.
Well, it's a very complicated story, Mark. And as you say, there are forces on all sides of the political spectrum who are weighing in. First of all, let me say that my own view is that this law has done some good things, and if it's allowed to stay on the books, if the Supreme Court allows it, and if the fall elections allow it to continue to be effective, I think it can do still more good things. However, I, like many other people of liberal persuasion, think that the law has some fundamental flaws that have to be corrected. The basic problem with the law is that it doesn't do much to change the basic nature of the healthcare system that we have. What it says is it will help the present system work better, but the present system is basically flawed. It cannot control costs, and sooner or later, the healthcare system is going to break the bank. It's going to break the federal budget, and it's going to be too expensive for the private sector to support also. So something has to give. Now, my own view is that the Supreme Court is pretty closely divided on the issue, as is the rest of the country. And it's hard to predict what's going to happen. If I had to say something, my guess is that it probably will pass Supreme Court muster very closely, maybe by 5-4 or 6-3 at best. But it's going to be a very close call. And I wouldn't be surprised if by 5-4 the Supreme Court says the mandate is not constitutional. We'll have to wait.
So let's talk about one thing you said. When you said that the package passed by Congress, as was the one passed by Massachusetts under Romney, does nothing to control costs.
That's right.
Right.
So I shouldn't say it does nothing, Mark. It does something. It tries. But most people who understand what's going on in healthcare don't believe that what's in the law is going to fundamentally deal with the problem. It may help a little bit, but it can't solve the problem because it depends on private insurance. And private insurance is not going to be able to control costs. And also fee-for-service, the way we pay doctors and the way we pay hospitals, well, the more they do, the more we pay. It's an itemized bill that either private insurers or Medicare has to pay. And that system simply cannot control costs. And furthermore, the United States healthcare system is run like an industry, like a private market. And markets and industry always try to expand. And healthcare shouldn't be a business. Healthcare should be a social service that we all should support through the tax mechanism, And until we change that philosophy, we can't expect the system to be affordable. It's just going to continue to grow and grow and grow because people make profits. You have to understand that what we pay, what all of us pay as health care costs, end up as profits and income for the people who are in the health care business. And we've got to change it from a business to a social service.
So taking a step from what you said here, I mean, it does depend on private insurance. That's clear. I'm curious how you think we change that and what it means to change fee-for-service
right.
for both physicians
well,
and hospitals.
Here's the problem. The goal that where we ought to be, what we ought to be doing, it seems to me, for anyone who really understands how healthcare works, anyone who's really worked in healthcare and understands what the problems are, almost everybody has to agree on what the goal should be. The problem is that the politics of American politics now are so divided, are so frozen into a partisan battle that nothing gets done. And until we change the political climate, either by election or just by experience and learning what won't work and what we're going to have to do, until we change the political climate, nothing can happen. But if we do change the political climate, it's clear what can be done. First of all, we have to say that we're going to change from a private insurance system to a public tax-supported system that funds health care. We don't need insurance. People think that health care must depend on insurance. No, it doesn't have to depend on insurance. Basically, the best way and the most efficient and the most cost-effective way to fund health care is to say, we'll tax everybody according to their means, a progressive tax, which is earmarked and designated to be used only for health care. And we will pay in advance to a non-profit health care delivery system, to doctors and organizations that are not in business, that are not for profit, to provide comprehensive care. And we will decide how much we want to spend on health care, and we'll limit the amount of money that we spend according to that. And we should say to the doctors, doctors, give us the best possible health care you can for what we're willing to spend. Everybody has to be in the system. Whether you choose to use it or not, everybody should be in, because if everybody isn't in, the system obviously won't work. And you should pay doctors not on a fee-for-service basis, not on a piecework basis, but on a salary basis, the way doctors are paid at the Mayo Clinic or Geisinger or Kaiser. There are lots of very fine doctor organizations now that pay doctors by a salary. The salary can be very good, a very substantial salary, but doctors should be paid to do what they're trained to do, namely give us the best possible care. No more and no less. But if you pay doctors on an item-by-item basis, there's a very strong incentive for them to do things that are not necessary, to be very generous in what they decide you need. And if there's an insurance system that will pay whatever the bill is, obviously the costs are going to go up. So it's very clear, Mark, what we need to do. We need to have a system that is like Medicare for all, except it should not pay the hospitals and the doctors fees for each individual service, but for comprehensive care.
Now, isn't some of the cost that we see, this immense cost in America, paid for health care, isn't part of though what hospitals do and how they, and hospitals also, you can have five hospitals in a region, they're all doing the same work, they all have the same helicopters, same machines, you have the pharmaceutical industry the cost of mental health care as well for all these pharmaceuticals, and the every time you turn a corner, there's a every human behavior becomes a mental illness.
Yes.
So
my wife, Dr. Angel, has written about that.
She has.
Very effectively. That's a sad story.
So, but all that doesn't all don't aren't all those component parts of what makes the cost of medicine in this country, healthcare in this country, high?
Yes, of course. We have to, but that's because it's become a business. The pharmaceutical industry, of course, has always been a business, and it should be a business, but it should be a business that's regulated. It's not regulated now. It's more or less allowed to do whatever it wants. And obviously, the drugs that it has. That it markets have to pass FDA inspection, but nobody tells the pharmaceutical industry what drugs we need. Nobody tells the pharmaceutical industry not to keep producing Me Too drugs. Nobody tells the pharmaceutical industry not to market in a misleading way or not to pay doctors for being shills for the industry. So you need to have a regulated pharmaceutical industry. But you do not have to have, and I think it's reasonable for pharmaceutical companies to make a profit. I don't object to profits when they're moderate and they're reasonable and it's done in a regulated system. But you don't need for-profit hospitals. There's no justification for for-profit hospitals at all. And you don't need a for-profit health insurance industry. So what we need is legislation, gradual, step-by-step legislation, which gradually eases the private insurance industry into doing something else with their money. Pay them off, get their investors out of the insurance business, and get them into clean energy or some other socially constructive or more profitable business, but not insurance. We don't need private insurance, and we don't need private hospitals. And we don't need to pay doctors on a fee-for-service basis. All of this could be gradually put in place by legislation if there were the political will. There won't be the political will until there's a more general understanding by the public of what the real issues are. There's an enormous amount of misinformation and confusion. People don't even know what's in their own best interest anymore. You also have a medical profession that is moving much too slowly. But doctors are gradually coming around, and I'm hopeful about that. So when the doctors change their attitude, when the public is better informed, then maybe the political logjam will loosen up. Maybe then the Congress will begin to act.
But I mean,
there's nothing impossible about it, Mark. It's just politically in a stalemate.
Let me ask these two questions. I mean, I'm just very curious. Two things that you described here. Going back for a while. I mean, when you graduated medical school, I assume
that's a long time ago.
It was in the late 40s or early 50s, I would imagine. Right?
That's right. I graduated medical school in 1946. That's when I got my MD, 1946.
Okay, so you've been in healthcare medicine for 65 years, almost 66 years.
That's right.
So,
and I've seen a lot of changes.
Yes, you have. So I want to ask you this. I mean, that world of medicine, as I explained before I went on the air, is a world of medicine I grew up in my family. So that was a world of the individual practitioner and the smaller hospitals. And
yes.
And, you know, doctors, patients came in, my dad, they couldn't afford it, he treated them for free. He didn't worry about it. He just did
that's his, right. Those were the good old-fashioned days and much simpler days. Things were much less expensive. And it was before there was all that money. It was before an enormous amount of money poured into the healthcare system. When we passed Medicare in 1965, a huge amount of money went into the system. As people began to get private more and more private insurance after World War II, with the wage freeze, employers could only attract employees by giving them fringe benefits. And one of the fringe benefits was health insurance. So gradually, private health insurance through employment and public health insurance through Medicare began to expand, and that brought an enormous amount of new money into the system. Furthermore, at the same time, after World War II, when I went into medicine, there was an explosion of new technology, new procedures, new tests, new drugs, new understanding of how to diagnose and treat disease, all of which monetarized the system, which up until that time was really of modest proportions. Then when health care began to be a very, very big money-making proposition, then the for-profit people saw the opportunity to come in. Then we began to have for-profit hospital chains and diagnostic clinics and nursing homes, all of which were for profit. And that's when the whole thing took off.
So now, and if it was built in some ways around the beginnings of Medicare, which was to help
65
to help senior citizens actually get health care, it became a national program. What's
right
to keep a new national program from launching another round of for-profit madness?
Well, what's to keep it? We have to decide. That's not what we want. The system needs to be regulated. Every other advanced country in the world, Mark, and every civilized, technically advanced country in Europe and all over the world, health care is regulated by the government. Prices are controlled. Technology is controlled. Medical education is controlled. Insurance is controlled. They may have private insurance, but the prices are always controlled. We're the only country, and certainly this is true in Canada as well, but we're the only country in the world where health care and health insurance is considered to be a business, a for-profit business. Now, you say, what's to prevent it from continuing? Well, if we're indifferent and we don't care and the Congress doesn't move, we'll just continue to spend more and more money until we go broke. And that's what's happening now. We're going broke. But sooner or later, I believe the American people will learn that we must have a different kind of system, not based on profit, and we'll begin to do the right thing. You know, Winston Churchill was reputed to have said during World War II, when people were asking him, why aren't your friends, the Americans, coming in to help us fight fascism? He said, don't worry about the Americans. In the long run, they'll always do the right thing, but only after they've tried everything else. And that's what we're doing. We've been trying everything else. We've been duped into believing that the market can solve the healthcare problem. That's what we're being told by Republicans and by conservatives. Let the market exert its magic effect. Well, okay, that's what we've had. We've essentially had a market-controlled healthcare system now for 30 or 40 years, and as a result, we're going broke. We're spending twice as much as the rest of the world on healthcare, and we're not getting our money's worth. By all the measurements of quality and access, and the American healthcare system is mediocre. The best American healthcare, I mean, if you go to the best hospitals and the best doctors, you'll get the best care in the world, but only if you know where to go and if you can afford it. But on average, American healthcare is only mediocre, and we're spending twice as much. And that's what we get for a market-driven system.
Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor, wrote an article the other day that said if the Supreme Court actually overruled, as he called, the so-called individual mandate,
right,
that it might actually open the door again for a real conversation about Medicare for All, if the two sides that are very different, this might actually be a time when the American people can wrestle with the issue in a deeper way.
Yes. Well, there are a lot of very thoughtful liberals, I think my wife is one of them, who believes that, who agrees with Wright, that it might be a good thing for the Supreme Court to strike the Affordable Care Act down, and let's start over again and consider a Medicare for all, a single-payer system. Well, I'm not quite convinced by that. I think that if the Supreme Court were to rule the Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional, I think we'd be in for a chaotic period. There'd be an enormous amount of harm done. There'd be chaos for probably a few years before we finally got around to realizing we had to do something. And also, I think that the Obama would probably not get into a second term. I happen to believe that Obama, for all his limitations, for all the disappointments that he's brought to many liberal-minded people, for all the disappointments we've had, has done some good things. And I think, judging by what the Republican nominees are saying, a Republican victory this fall would be a disaster for the country. So, and I think that a Supreme Court ruling against the Affordable Care Act would help the Republican cause, and I think it would lead to chaos. The Republicans don't have the vaguest idea of what to do. Well, I've listened very carefully. I've read everything that's ever been written, all the Ryan Ryan proposals for modifying or reviving Medicare. Essentially, what it is privatization of Medicare. If you read the details, you see that what they propose to do essentially is to turn Medicare over to a private market, just as Bush wanted to turn Social Security over to a private market. And that's disaster. That's sheer disaster. We're the only country in the world it's foolish enough to think that that the private market will take care of social needs like decent medical care for everybody and retirement security for the elderly. I don't go along with the idea. I'd like to see the Affordable Care Act continue and be revised as it must be. I certainly agree with my wife, and I agree with Reich, and I agree with all those liberals who think that we have to move to a single-payer system. Of course we do. But I think we should do it from where we are now rather than starting from scratch.
Dr. Arnold Roman, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to have you on the air with us once again. It's been too many years. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you.
The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555.